Hello and welcome to Radio SGN. I am one of your humble hosts, A.V. Eichenbaum, pronouns they, them, now officially the editor-in-chief at Seattle Gay News. Woo. And with me, as always, is Lindsay Anderson, she, her, one of our fantastic staff writers. Lindsay, how are you today?
I am doing great. And actually, one of the reasons I'm doing great, I wanted to bring up at the start of this podcast, maybe start off with a little light stuff. Are you all caught up on what we do in the shadows?
I am not. Oh. I'm like a season behind.
Oh, have you seen season 3 then, though?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So I just started watching it like Halloween time, and I'm on season 3. And I had to scroll through our chat on Slack to get to the link for this Zoom meeting. And so I had to scroll past your Halloween picture again. And I know last episode we were just talking about Halloween, but your picture where you like look like the Baron... I was actually laughing sitting here because it reminded me of the episode I just watched last night where they dig up the Baron, who is not dead, and then he's riding on the dog.
It's a great episode.
I think it's my favorite so far. When he's riding in the little Barbie car, I lost it. I think I almost peed myself.
I hate the finale for season 3, I'll be honest. So you have that to look forward to. Season 3 has a lot of golden moments. Have you seen Nandor trying to be human yet?
No, I just saw the one where that whole episode was him trying to get the lady at the gym because he's in love with her.
Yes.
And Colin Robinson and Laszlo like dress up as him with the cloak. Mm-hmm. And then they keep being like, I don't think she's into guys just because like they, you know, think they're so smooth, but they're really not. And then at the end, she's not into guys. she's like, I'm a lesbian, and she is convinced that Nandor is in love with Guillermo. It's golden.
Queer cinema at its finest. Queer television at its...
Yes.
Speaking of queer news, that's what we're here to talk about. This is the one and only podcast for SGN, Seattle's premier LGBTQIA news media outlet. If you didn't know, now you do. Thank you so much for joining us today. But as we're recording this, Friday, November 4th, it's the 100th anniversary of the unveiling of King Tut's tomb. Oh. And what bisexual, pansexual, or NB among us has not gone through an Egyptology phase as a child?
You know who recently went through one was Trisha Paytas, my podcast idol.
I took a page out of your book last night, couldn't sleep, and was just on TikTok until 4 in the morning. I finally got to...
Trisha Talk?
Trisha, yes. Talk, where she... Oh my God. I'm scarred for life. I'm scarred.
I'm so glad we can share this pain together.
Like, I had to start clicking, like, not interested, not interested, not interested, because it was like every other video was about her saying that she actually isn't going to give birth to Elizabeth.
Hey, that was a good move on her, honestly, because like when you know Trisha Paytas and the rumors were going around that she was giving birth to Queen Elizabeth, I believed it, and she like had to come forward and be like, no, that's not true. She like has rare gem moments where she's like kind of almost a decent human being, and then she does something crazy like dress up like Zac Efron and do the whole music video for that High School Musical song, and then tell everybody that she's trans, and then take it back a few days later.
What a life we live. What an era to be alive.
Yeah, I'm so glad we're alive at the same time Trisha Paytas is.
My day has been interesting. I interviewed a gentleman who I'm going to be writing a piece about, and we'll probably talk about it a little bit more in depth in next week's episode, but he's part of the Dying with Dignity program as a patient. He's chosen to euthanize himself, and he's going to be surrounded by his 9 partners. He's polyamorous and part of the LGBTQ community. He's a founder of Mensa. He was a journalist, and he worked for Microsoft. And I'm not going to play the interview on air, probably, at least not for this show, but we had an hour-long conversation about things. And it turns out we have a mutual acquaintance in Oberon Zell, probably best known for his Ringling Brothers act where he trained goats that he bred to look like unicorns, and who was somebody that I knew in college because I would go to his shop all the time and he was trying to get me to join his occultist thing. But yeah, I guess me and Erez, who I interviewed today, had a mutual connection there, and that was actually really interesting. It's just a small world, you know? In an era where I feel like often many of us are struggling to survive, thinking about how we're going to keep up with life, what a luxury it is to be able to contemplate death once in a while and just sort of think about the end of things, you know? So that's the energy I'm bringing to the table. That, and I'm eating my favorite candy, which Lindsay was balking at before we started recording, black licorice gumdrops, crows. If you've never had crows, you should try them.
Nasty. Disgusting. You're like my grandmother.
Is your grandmother also non-binary and obsessed with death?
Who is to say? My grandmother is, like, very strangely an ally, I think. She is in her 70s now, very, very Catholic. Like, there's not a wall in her home that doesn't have a crucifix on it. She has a sitting room in her house. Like, that's how you know she's old, because, like, what normal person has a sitting room? And it's got a theme to it. The theme is apples. So all the decor in that room is apple themed. It is the apple room. And yeah, she's like very tough. Her and my grandpa are like polar opposites. And I'm gonna be visiting her soon for Thanksgiving. And she requested that I bring my partner, who I have not had the conversation with her is my partner, because my grandma is the aforementioned 70-year-old Catholic woman with crucifixes on every wall.
Mm.
But I think she likes Isabel, honestly, because every time she sees Isabel, she compliments their hair. So, like, Isabel had an undercut for a while, and my grandma was like, I really like that. It can be long or short. That's so cool. And then at one point, one of my nosy aunts was like talking to my mom and was like, so is Lindsay gay? Like, what's the deal here? And my mom was like, you gotta talk to her yourself. Like, I'm not gonna out my kid to you. And my grandma from across the room goes, of course she is. She's dating Isabel and working at a gay newspaper.
Your grandmother seems very accepting for a 70-year-old Catholic.
Yeah, it's surprising. But she is.
I have a very different relationship with God. I treat my body like a temple. There's a lot of incense in these lungs. Each cigarette brings me one step closer to God. I'm in love. Love with every minute of life. The conversation I had today has given me a lot to think about. And I'm finding myself grateful. Grateful for these days. And I hope that you find yourself grateful for your grandmother. And I hope that you, listener at home, find yourself grateful for these ads. Support for Radio SGN comes from Book It Repertory Theater, presenting Austin Unbound, a fully improvised play celebrating the works of Jane Austen, running November 30th through December 18th. Book It's intrepid cast of professional improvisers will transport you to the Regency era, to drawing rooms and manor houses, to revel in the spirit of the works we know so well. For tickets, visit bookit.org. That's BOOK-IT.org.
Hi. This is Dr. V-Hill with V-Hill Family Medicine. Ever wish your doctor knew you by name, understood where you were coming from, and listened to your unique health concerns and worries? I have built just such a practice where the focus is on you and the care delivered is in line with your values and ideals. Learn more about affirming primary care at V-Hill Family Medicine. Visit VIGILMD.com or call 253-693-0071.
Joining me today via Zoom, she's a comedian, she's a producer at Flock at Olmsted every month, stand-up, introduce other things there, or aspiring writer and comedian Juno Men. Juno, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me, Ash.
How are you? What's new with you?
Gosh, well, so earlier today I made a quiche with some leftover broccoli and spinach, and got to share that with my neighbors, and that's probably the second most exciting thing that I'll do today. Second to chatting with you.
Oh, smooth. Nice recovery.
That's what I'm known for.
I believe the quiche is probably going to be more exciting than just hanging out with little old me, but we're glad to have you on the show. How long have you been doing Flock now?
So I've been co-producing Flock at Olmsted in Capitol Hill since, I want to say, May of this year, so going on 6 or 7 months now. It's been going well.
And could you describe what that is to some of our listeners who may not be familiar?
So Flock is an all-queer stand-up comedy showcase. And, you know, one of the things that we really tried to do is get a mix of queer comedians in the Seattle scene and eventually probably in the broader Pacific Northwest scene that are really established as comedians, like really, really solid performers. And we also try to make sure that we bring in a lot of new talent that's kind of coming onto the Seattle scene. A lot of comedians that are just doing it for the first time or doing it for the first couple of months.
And our very own Lindsay Anderson has been in Flock a couple of times. Who else performs regularly?
You know, we try our best to make sure that we rotate the lineups because we want to try to get a really broad spectrum of different performers from the city rotating through the show. And we've been really fortunate to have a lot of really great performers and to be able to tap into a pretty broad and diverse pool of talent. Actually, we produced a show just last Thursday that Lindsay was on, and she did great. But we had Andy Iwantio, who's, I think, one of the best comedians working in Seattle right now, and was, to my knowledge, one of the very first, if not the first, openly transgender comedians that was working in the Seattle scene. And so it was really, really exciting to have her on the show. We also had Dewa Dorje, who has also been around the Seattle scene, I believe, for a very long time, and great comedian. Am I allowed to plug other comedian shows?
Oh, absolutely, 100%.
Dewa, I believe, hosts a monthly show called These Nuts at the Hereafter Room at the Crocodile. It's a great show from everything I've heard. It was really exciting to have her on the show because she's a comedian that I've admired for a really long time. And my understanding is probably one of the first prominent female Asian comedians, which means a lot to me because, you know, I'm Asian, I'm trans. And so this last show was really exciting for me to be able to be a part of because I got to feature two comedians that I think have opened a lot of doors that I've had the benefit of getting to walk through in their wake in the Seattle scene.
Well, that's amazing. That's be really rewarding to kind of feel the scene blossoming. Because when people think Seattle, they don't necessarily think comedy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not from here originally, so maybe I'm biased. Are you from Seattle originally?
No, I'm actually from Orange County, California.
Oh, okay, for sure. I'm from Gilroy, which is nowhere, but it's near San Jose.
Okay, yeah. So this is a NorCal-SoCal dichotomy here that we got going.
Yeah, that's what the tension is right now. So we're listeners at home. We are about to go into fisticuffs.
Well, actually, instead of doing an interview about my comedy, can we just have a 15-minute battle about who has the better boba?
San Jose, always. The poke is better, the food's better.
I will end you, Ash. SoCal has seven leaves. We've got a boba shop on every corner. It's better.
I think the weather's better where I'm from. You know, we got Silicon Valley, we have microdosing, so the boba's better because you're higher all the time. The weed is good and the surf is up. Orange County, what do you guys have, motorcycles?
Let's see. We got motorcycles. We have the entertainment industry. We have Superior Boba. We've got Little Saigon in Orange County. We've got Koreatown in L.A.
That's fair. Koreatown is, honestly, it's one of my favorite food experiences because it's the Latinx community that has meshed into Koreatown has made some of the, just that food culture, the fusion. I adore it. I love it. I love every second of it. So I'll give you that.
Listeners of Seattle Gay News, you heard it here first. Ash has conceded that Southern California is superior to Northern California.
I would not go that far, but I would say they have better Korean-Mexican fusion food.
Okay, it's my turn to concede something about NorCal, if this is the kind of conversation we're having. Just
we're bridging the gap.
In the service of politeness and diplomacy, I will concede that Northern California has superior public transportation. Like, it's better. Right now, it doesn't really feel like you could live in LA unless you own a car are okay with just staying in your neighborhood for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I do appreciate the BART. It's fun going home and remembering that sometimes transit, it screams at you, because that's not something that happens up here, that sweet symphony.
You know, maybe it's because I spent so much time living in Orange County where you have a car all the time that for me, the idea of well-developed public transportation infrastructure is synonymous with the idea of metropolitan living. And so when you describe the BART yelling at you at the end of a workday, like there's something really romantic about that for me. Like it's almost like you're pitching me a rom-com and that's the meet cute moment.
Okay, yeah, so where would this rom-com go?
Listen, I can't tell you where the rom-com is going, but if it's on the BART system, I can tell you it's going to be 45 minutes late.
How long you been up here in Seattle?
My journey to Seattle was interesting because I moved here, the Renton area, if you count that as part of Seattle, in 2015. And then, like a month after I moved here from Montana, my dad got really sick. And so I immediately left all my stuff at the place that I was renting in Renton, thinking that, it'd be a couple of months. And I ended up moving back down to Southern California and staying with my dad while he was on hospice for like 4 to 6 months. And so I officially moved to the Seattle area in 2015, but I officially like moved here and then started living here in like the spring, summer of 2016.
Interesting time to move to Seattle.
Yeah, I feel like that was right around the Horizon event of tech companies becoming the really big thing in the world.
What I've noticed, and maybe you've noticed this as well, is people have become more and more ingrained in the culture of their job than in the culture of the city, especially in the tech district. I live just a mile from South Lake Union, and Capitol Hill has changed quite a bit over the last few years as well.
Yeah.
I don't remember what the question was supposed to be there.
For one, I'm glad that I got what you were trying to say about 2016, 2017 being an interesting time to live in Seattle, because I assumed tech, but I really worried that you were talking about the rising price of a cup of drip coffee.
Why is a cup of coffee $5? This is a coffee city.
Well, I think it depends on the kind of coffee you get, because if it's a cup of drip coffee, it's like $3.50 to $4. And if it's a latte, then it's anywhere from $8 to $27. I feel like Seattle has made my coffee order so much bougier than it was before I moved here.
Let's exchange coffee orders because I've cut down, but apparently what my regular order is fairly intense. And I didn't realize it until I moved up here and people started questioning whether or not I actually wanted what I wanted, because I used to just make it for myself, right? So what's your regular bougie coffee order?
So my regular bougie coffee order is an oat milk vanilla latte,
Okay.
usually hot, unless it's an especially warm day, and then I go iced.
Okay, so my regular coffee order is a quad shot in the dark, 12 ounces, no room for cream. So what that is it's 4 shots of espresso and then black coffee all the way up in 12 ounces. And see,
That
okay, so you just made the
is
face.
so much caffeine.
I've cut down. I've cut down. I used to be, when I was a barista, it was 20 ounces, 8 shots, black coffee all the way up. And
How has your heart not exploded?
I'll tell you what, my body is not happy with me, but I do get things done. Yeah, I cut it down. I went to the 6 shots in the dark and a 12 ounce. And we called it the full revolver, because it's basically Russian
That's a
roulette, whether
perfect
or not
name
I'm
for
gonna
that.
die or not. Yeah, so I've cut down. I scared a Canadian.
I feel like the most American thing you could say
I
on live
terrified
media.
a Canadian. I went up to Vancouver right before the pandemic. And I ordered my usual. The poor got their supervisor and then the manager and then the shop owner, and they were like, are you sure? Are you okay? Like, do you like blink twice if you're in danger? It was tragic.
So what I'm imagining here is the way you order coffee at a Canadian cafe sounds like how someone bets in a casino when they're going over the table limit. Like it's a $5,000 limit and you shove $20,000 in chips across the table and the dealer has to look back to the pit boss and the pit boss has to like sheepishly radio something into the camera crew and the camera crew has to call in the GM of the casino and be like, "Yo, are we good to take this?"
I'm all in.
That's
Yeah,
not a
it's
thing that
all or
I would
nothing.
condone doing for coffee.
I mean, I didn't realize it was a big deal. I'm drinking coffee right now.
So am I.
Okay, so maybe my order's not bougie. It has gone up in price lately, though. It was like $7 for this the other day.
I don't know when I became a above $5 per cup of coffee person, but I'm that person now.
When you go home, do you order the same thing? Is it the same price? What's the coffee differential in Orange County?
I feel like when I go back to SoCal, I'm get rid of coffee out of my diet. It's like no longer a part of my regimen, and I replace it exclusively with boba.
Okay, because it's
And then
superior.
because it's maybe not superior, because that would be a dangerous thing to say on a Seattle-based podcast, but it is more prevalent, I think, and readily available than it is in the Seattle area.
Of the differences you see between your home and Seattle, What are the biggest differences that you've observed?
Okay, well, obviously less prevalence of boba in the Seattle area. But I actually think that that feeds into an actual difference that I see. And admittedly, I have a lot of bias to say this because I think that anyone that comes from any area has a bias to be nostalgic about that area. And no diss on the Seattle food scene, but food in SoCal is so good. It is so good. There's so much good Mexican food, Korean food, Chinese food, Mediterranean food, Middle Eastern food. They have Carl's Jr., which we kind of sort of have in Seattle, but like you got to drive 20 minutes south or north of the city to get to it.
That's wild. I agree. I don't think the food up here is as good as people say it is. I think the food in California across the board is better. The ingredients are fresher. When I moved up here for the first time, I was kind of couch surfing for a bit, and I worked at one of the delis in Pike Place Market.
Wait, which deli did you work at?
Mishu.
Is that what you go into the main market entrance and then it's a couple of stalls down to the right?
Yeah, it's by the little French bakery, and it's
okay.
And it's really close to that Starbucks that's there. But
okay.
I worked there for a summer, but the ingredients they were getting were from my hometown. They were from Yusuji Farms, which is in Gilroy. And so like I was using the same ingredients I had been using at my barista job for sandwiches. I just thought that was really interesting. And I think that's it's partially why food is so expensive here as well.
Have you ever been to a place in the Seattle area? I don't know if it's still active, but it's called Cali Burger.
I have not. It was in the U District, right?
It was. I don't think it's there anymore. And Cali Burger and whatever parent company owns Cali Burger, please don't sue me because I have nothing to take. But it feels like such a blatant ripoff of In-N-Out. In-N-Out is really, really good. And I've been to Cali Burger. It's like twice the price for a 75% of the quality. Again, Cali Burger, I have no assets that you can seize. It would be more expensive to sue me than it's worth. Please don't.
Let's get controversial. Dick's or In-N-Out?
Different circumstances, right? Mm-hmm. In-N-Out is a place I would go to for an actual meal. In-N-Out is a place I would go to sit down with someone and talk while we're both sober and to just enjoy a nice meal. And Dick's is the place I go to at like 1 a.m. mm-hmm. when I'm like, I just need something to shove into my body to absorb whatever it is I did to my body in the hours preceding that burger.
Each is their own sort of heaven.
Buying a bag of Dick's burgers is almost like getting a whole pizza and just having multiple slices that you can munch through over a couple of hours.
Sure.
Like you just got a bag of Dick's and you can eat one every 15, 20 minutes.
Recommending a bag of Dick's, there's nothing more SGN than that.
That was the one line I prepared for this podcast, so I'm glad you queued me up for it.
Yeah. Anytime.
Seattle, you heard it here first.
It's hard.
Go get yourself a bag of Dick's.
It's hard to have a straight man on a gay show, you know what I mean? Like, it's like the setup punchline situation, the Laurel and Hardy aesthetic. I do my best, but it's just tough.
Is this, when you have straight men on the show, is it something like an Abbott and Costello routine where you're like, who's on first? And they're like, do you mean who is on first? Or are you asking the question, who, as in the preposition, is on first base?
Usually I'll say, well, who's on first? And they go, actually? I always feel like if Lindsay and I ever did end up doing any sort of bits or routines in that way, it would be more akin to Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein, and I would have to be Frankenstein.
Wait, what does that mean? Like, one person would do the elegant setup, and the other person would be like, who?
Exactly, yeah. I'm not as eloquent as I make myself out to be. Lindsay would say part of a joke, and then I would say, fire bad, you know, and that would be our back and forth.
Could you have a go-to line like Gilbert Gottfried on Hollywood Squares back in the day?
Remind me.
I can't remember the episode, but there was this like whole thing where I think Gilbert Gottfried was on an episode of Hollywood Squares. He was on the show for a couple of seasons, and then he just started doing this catchphrase in one episode that killed everyone. He would scream, "You fool!" but in a very Gilbert Gottfried, so it'd be like, "You fool!"
Any sort of catchphrase I can throw out into the show, like maybe a hey, hey, hey in the style of Fat Albert, or a hey, hey, hey.
Oh, okay. Two birds, one stone here. Let me know if you're into this idea. Okay. But you could get a sponsorship from a local fast food business called Dick's Hamburgers.
Right.
And then anytime Lindsay set you up for a punchline and you just didn't want to yes end, you could just be like, get yourself a bag of dicks.
And then we have the air horn. We're going to rebrand as an early morning shock jock show. That's the plan.
Exactly.
I love it. I'm all
and then
for it.
$15 every time you throw that out.
That's enough for a bag of dicks.
Exactly. That's enough for at least four dicks. I realize we've not talked much about comedy at all.
Yeah. That's okay. You've got Flock every month. Is there a day that it falls on regularly?
Yes. So Flock, which I co-produce, and I don't know if I've name-dropped them yet, and if I haven't, I really want to. I co-produce with another wonderful queer comedian in the Seattle scene, Zanae Aquino. Flock is at Olmsted in Capitol Hill every second Thursday at 9 p.m. I want to also pump some of the other shows that go on at Olmsted. There's a comedy show there every Thursday of the month. First Thursday is Kinky Queer Cabaret. Second Thursday is the show that I co-produce with Zanae. That's Flock. That's queer comedy. Third Thursdays for right now is a show called The Hot Seat, which is a show where comedians come on, they perform, then they go outside. They all are made to get high for a little while, and they come back on and they get interviewed. And then the fourth show right now is called The Blackout, and it's, I think, Seattle's first all-comedy black showcase. That's a wonderful show produced by a very good friend of mine, Javen Jones.
Fantastic. Where can we find you online?
So you can find me on Instagram at Seattle Juno, and I should probably do a better job with my branding, but that's really the only place right now.
And are you also on Twitter?
I am also Seattle Juno. I'm not as active on Twitter. I think I tweet out once a week, and the last tweet I put out was in reference to a House of Dragons episode that dropped last night. Varys with a foot fetish is not as good as regular Varys.
I have a lot of questions about that sentence, but we are unfortunately out of time. We're going to put all of that in the show notes. Any parting words for our listeners sitting at home or on the bus?
If you're on the bus, make sure that you grab a seat towards the back. You know, if you put a backpack on the seat next to you, please make sure that there are other seats available and you're not being a bus asshole. And then in general, like, you know, Seattle has a really, really beautiful comedy scene. I've been fortunate to be welcomed into it and to experience a lot of it. And please, 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 if you like comedy, if you like live comedy, the best way to support it is by going out to shows, by supporting comedians. You know, if you have friends that are participating or if you see live shows happening, go to them, buy a ticket, check it out, sit through the whole show, enjoy it, say hi to the comedians afterwards. And yeah, I think that's all I got. Oh, and, you know, get a bag of dicks.
Get a bag of dicks. Well, Juno, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been an absolute delight. Hope to have you back on sometime.
Yeah. Oh, question. Do I get half the money that Dicks will give you for saying get a bag of dicks?
You know, it was your idea. I feel like you probably get at least, if not half, at least a third.
Okay.
So I'll have my people call your people.
Okay. I don't have a lot of people, but yeah, no, that sounds good.
I am my own people, so.
Me too.
It's a good thing I'm they, them, you know, plural.
Perfect.
Yeah. And we're back.
Juno's like one of my favorite people in the world, so. Shout out, Juno.
What do we got to talk about this week?
Well, there's Patty Murray.
Yeah, let's do that. First, I think in context, Patty Murray, not only the first female senator for Washington, a long-serving senator, still with it, honestly very sharp, unlike Nancy Pelosi, but we don't have to talk about that because she's suffering currently.
Oh my god, yeah, that was so fucked up. What happened to her husband?
Yeah, I mean, I have a bad take on it, as I usually do with these things, but like, if it were a Republican, I would not feel bad, and so I feel it's hypocritical for me to be like, oh, those conservatives attacking people. How dare they? You know what I mean? Maybe I'm just kind of numb to this shit now. I don't know.
Yeah, but you know, it doesn't happen to right-wing Republicans, because liberals aren't as unhinged and seeking to kill Republican.
Well, that's not true. I mean, do you remember that baseball game where the leftist sniper tried to kill a bunch of Republican senators back in, like, 2017?
No, I do not remember that.
It's because no one on the left talks about it anymore.
Well, I was going to say that's because since then, thousands of Republicans have stormed the Capitol to try
that's
to kill
true.
Republicans and Democrats.
That's fair. Yeah. They probably consider themselves independent. And also, he didn't actually end up shooting anyone. No one actually got hurt. It was a botched attempt. But, you know, I didn't really have any feelings one way or the other about the whole Pelosi thing, and maybe that makes me cold, but Patty Murray, definitely cares, and that's she nice does. To know. It's nice to see that in politics. You don't always see that.
I love Patty Murray. I wrote a midterm report on her for a women in politics class in college. Did you know that she was one of the prime sponsors of VAWA, the Violence Against Women Act?
I did not know that.
It was since repealed by Donald Trump, but it protected victims of domestic violence and was very important, and we really should reinstate it. But yeah, Patty Murray, she's really cool. I was like really excited to get to go and sit at this small round table that she did with members of the Capitol Hill community, but also specifically LGBTQ people, for her to talk about what's at stake with this election. And one thing that I learned while I was there, or didn't realize before going, was that this is a really close election for her. You know, you don't really think about Washington as being, I mean, we're not a battleground state, you know, we are a blue state. Mm-hmm. Even though I grew up on the east side, where it is a lot more conservative, and people will definitely be voting for Tiffany Smiley, Patty Murray's opponent. But Tiffany Smiley has been getting a lot of endorsements and financial donations from big right-wing sponsors and corporations, including the Graham family. You know the Graham family, the televangelists who are very outspokenly anti-LGBTQ. She's gotten a bunch of money most recently from Mitch McConnell, or like a support group of Mitch McConnell's, because they are trying to usurp Patty Murray's seat. This could be because she is so outspoken in favor of the LGBTQ community. During this talk, she really kind of went on to describe how she strongly advocates for especially trans youth and stands up against Republicans that are trying to add little add-ons to bills that would criminalize parents seeking affirmative care for trans children. And she's also worked really hard to make sure that Washington stays a safe state for people, especially in like neighboring states like Idaho that are now coming over here for abortion care, HRT, you know, and everything under the sun like that that's kind of being banned. But her opponent, Tiffany Smiley, is a Trump supporter through and through. She did not accept the results of the election, thought that Biden stole the election. She, before running for senator, had made a lot of homophobic tweets and posts on her social media accounts. And even though she's kind of shaped up her act, her angle for this election, like that she's running on change, that she's going to be a new face for Washington, Patty Murray laid it out that, you know, in the end of the day, if Tiffany Smiley does win, if people don't show up and vote because we think that she just has it in the bag, it will be disastrous for Washington families and for the whole country, because it would turn over the Senate majority to Mitch McConnell, who is likely to pass a lot of really bad legislation, like the federal Don't Say Gay bill that is right now in the House of Representatives.
And we have to look at this on a global stage as well, with the rise of fascism coming back in Italy, mm-hmm. and Netanyahu and the hyper-conservative party that was ousted last year has come back in Israel. You know, the world is changing. We're on the precipice of something huge, and if we don't get out there and share our vote, share our voice, try to protect the values that we care about, because what, we think the system's broken, which arguably it is, but at least we can have some sort of a say. If we don't get out there, we're going to lose everything that we've been able to keep since the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. Every step that we've made in the last 100 years or so could potentially be thrown out the window. With global fascism on the rise, there's going to be a lot fewer places for Americans to run to as well. Mm-hmm. Like, I have family in Milan. I was thinking of moving to Italy at a certain point when my life was kind of tumultuous. That's not an option for me anymore if I want to live an honest life as a non-binary queer person. Now, they say they're not going to be reversing any of the rights that are given to people, but why would you believe someone who says that when they also say that traditional, quote, traditional family values are their priority, you know? And that's the same with Tiffany Smiley. Mm-hmm.
Italy's an interesting one too, because it actually rates really far down on the LGBTQ safety index for people living there. They don't grant a lot of rights and protections to same-sex couples and trans non-binary people. And also because the country is actually very religious and conservative in a lot of pockets, there is a lot of violence that happens to members of the community. So it's, you know, for anybody listening, if you're thinking about even traveling to Italy, do your research and try to stick to main cities, because there are places where it's pretty dangerous and the local law enforcement will not support you if they know you're queer.
Speaking of trans folks being targeted, former Trump aide Stephen Miller orchestrated a campaign that targeted trans kids in a last-minute election ad. Mike Andrew wrote about this. Stephen Miller, scum of the earth, just a snot through and through. I'm trying to keep it as PG as possible. I could go on forever about how much I despise this person. But to target trans kids in a national ad campaign, as well as claiming that Biden's administration is anti-white, is, I mean, it's a new low. Mm-hmm. Let's read some of the statements from these fucks. The Biden administration and its allies are advancing a radical agenda that denies biology, denies reality, and denies that they are threatening children, said America First Legal's Vice President and General Counsel Jean Hamilton, defending the radio ad that America First Legal put out. And that's, of course, Stephen Miller's campaign organization. It's disgusting.
I feel like the attacks are just coming one after the other. Just before we got on this podcast meeting, I saw a TikTok of a cis straight white girl being harassed in a bathroom because some old Karen thought that she was a trans woman. And I'm just like, they're attacking each other now, you know?
What a life. I am concerned for the future of our community and all the strides that we have been able to make forth. Even in a city like Seattle that argues that it is progressive, I'm becoming a little bit fearful. I'll be honest, I try not to face the world through a lens of fear, but I'm scared that we're going to lose our rights if this election goes awry. I mean, Seattle's kind of the liberal base holding things down, mm-hmm. Tacoma to a lesser extent.
From my political viewpoint, it is looking a little bit bleak. You know, while I am a little more worried about Patty Murray's seat than I would be normally, I am getting my ballot out and voting for her. And when this airs, it will be the last day in Washington to vote by mail. It's also the last day to register to vote. If you go into a voting location and register in person, you can vote in person, but you cannot vote by mail if you're registering anytime after October 31st. But, you know, please, if you're listening to this and you haven't voted yet, please get out there and vote. A lot of people, especially young people, overlook midterm elections because they're not as glamorous as, you know, the presidential election that's going to be in 2 years, but they are arguably more important. The trend is that the party in power loses seats in the midterm election that comes after the election of the president. Right now, Democrats hold the White House, and we're looking at the possibility that Democrats are going to lose some seats in Congress. And with that, you know, we've already seen a lot of difficult things happen. Well, Democrats did have a majority. We lost Roe v. Wade. We're looking at the loss of more LGBTQ rights. They haven't been able to codify gay marriage yet as, you know, a legal right. It's still just a ruling by the Supreme Court that could be reversed anytime. So yeah, it is terrifying, but get out there and vote, because in my opinion, you have no right to complain about it if you don't vote.
Also, it seems like while Democrats are not getting things done at the rate that we had hoped, it also is the case that for years now, the Republican Party and anyone sort of close to the moderate level there has actively been just doing everything in its power to vote against whatever the Democrats want, no matter what it is.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And then taking credit for what gets passed as something that they're like, oh, yeah, this is great. Yeah. American politics has been in a state of trash gridlock for far too long. Mm-hmm. But we can try to make that difference, since burning it down is not an option at the moment.
Yeah, that is one thing that actually didn't quite make it into my article, was Patty Murray mentioned that right now in Congress, Democrats are trying to pass a law that will protect same-sex marriage, and they have a lot of Republicans that have said that they will vote in support of this, but they're not going to do it until after the midterm election. And this is because they don't want the Democrats to have a win. They don't want them to be able to say, we got this done. And they also don't want to risk losing their far-right voters that won't vote for them if they know that they voted to support gay marriage. It's a mind game that they're playing, and the losers are always the people. It's fucking the worst, you know?
Speaking of fucking, there was an academic article published about gay pornography. Change of tone a little bit, something a little lighter. A gentleman by the name of Dr. Joseph Brennan, who is a gay porn academic, he's a doctor of gay porn, he wrote a new entry on gay pornography in the Oxford Research Encyclopedia, which is a huge win for the queer community. Being formally acknowledged as an art form is new to people outside of the community for a number of reasons. Anyway, it's a really interesting read. Porn studies is an interesting thing in terms of filmography, and genuinely, it's a great article by Daniel Lindsley. I hope you get the chance to throw on some Vaseline and just dive right in.
Can I ask you a question about...
Yeah.
Do you think that a doctor of gay porn requires his partners to call him the doctor in bed, you know, only address him as doctor?
I guess it depends on what he's into, right? I would argue probably not to bring the career into the bedroom, but, you know, working on work-life boundaries is hard for a lot of academics.
The doctor is in. That would be my slogan. Print this article out and bring it over for Thanksgiving, Friendsgiving, when the topic comes to what have you been reading in the news lately?
Pick up a newspaper at one of our over 200 locations throughout King County and Pierce County and make your next Thanksgiving dinner just a little bit more memorable. Do you have plans for Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I'm going to head home to visit my grandma, hopefully.
Our holiday issue comes out pre-Thanksgiving, which blows my mind. We're going to be covering that in a few weeks here. The year is just wrapping up. What's up?
Well, I was going to say, before we sign off, I would like to discuss the Kit Connor story that we didn't get a chance to actually write about in the paper.
Yeah, that sounds good. What's that about?
I don't know if you've seen the hit Netflix teen series Heartstopper. It's incredible. You should watch it. It'll make you happy.
Do these look like the cheekbones of a happy person?
No, but they could if you watched Heartstopper.
All right.
But yeah, it's based on the hit best-selling graphic novel series by Alice Osman, and it's just about, like, a bunch of gay and trans kids in London. One of the stars of the show, who plays Nick, his name is Kit Connor. He is an actor, and he was being basically trolled and bullied by fans of the show online for the last several weeks, after fans spotted him holding hands with a female co-worker from a different project. They were saying that he was queerbaiting by playing a queer role. They were saying that he was taking a role away from, you know, somebody in the community. He deleted his Twitter, but came back after a little while just to tweet, you know, just so you know, I am bisexual. Thanks for, like, forcing an 18-year-old to out himself, and then deleted his Twitter again. And, you know, the thing is, too, is the character he plays in the show is also bisexual, and yet there were a lot of these allegations that I think just bring another layer to a conversation that we've discussed in the paper and on the podcast of, you know, queer baiting and, you know, what that means for, like, queer people or bisexual people that maybe aren't ready to come out either. And, you know, what do they owe you?
It also kind of speaks to something that I get frustrated with all the time, and that is the reactionary ability of the internet to just decide to cancel people for literally no reason, whether they're right or wrong. You know, there's a lot to be said there, and, you know, anyone who speaks out against it is, you know, labeled to be canceled, I guess. But it's like these people who are active cancelers, actively part of this, where they jump on these bandwagons so quickly without even looking into it or thinking about it, are just as harmful in some ways as red caps, you know, like conspiracy nuts on the QAnon side. Of course, we're not going to see a bunch of gaylers storming the Capitol, but at the same time, it's like people should be concerned that this is happening, that people are swayed so easily and refuse or don't do fact checks. They just like to get angry about stuff because that's a political weapon waiting to be wielded.
Yeah, well, and also, like, forcing somebody to come out to be able to protect their career is, it's just kind of messed up.
It's fucked up. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's not cool. It's a damn shame that it happened. And it's going to happen again. Because these people that do this get no reprimand. Because they believe they're on the right side of history. And it's all one big echo chamber.
Yeah. That's not to say that all cancel culture is bad. Because, you know, the internet has helped a lot with, like, the Me Too movement. And calling out problematic behavior of other people, like Leonardo DiCaprio, who like only dates, you know, younger women, where you're like, oh, that is kind of predatory.
I mean, he also didn't get canceled, but yes, I do agree with you. There's a place and a time, there's a reason to do it, but there are also people that seem cushioned enough from it that it makes it almost pointless
like
now.
Like Trisha Paytas.
Like Trisha Paytas.
She should be canceled.
And that guy from whatever, the Try Guys.
Oh, Nate? Oh, no, he is canceled. I don't think he's coming back from that.
I just see these videos of the Try Guys making jokes about it, like, in their new
videos.
Well,
he got fired. He's, like, he's not a Try Guy anymore.
Can I be honest with you? They all look identical to me. I say this as a very white person with glasses. All of the Try Guys look the same.
No, Eugene is the gay one.
I don't know who that is.
He's the gay Try Guy.
I don't know what that means. I didn't care about them when they were popular. Why would I care about them now?
They kicked him out, and Eugene especially, because he was best friends with the wife. You gotta be in on the Try Guy knowledge.
I'm sorry I brought it up, but it's like, you know, these people don't get canceled, and then maybe they should be, and then the people that do get canceled, you know, most of the time it's great. Like Louis C.K. Should have been canceled for sure. A lot of these older dudes fucked up. But there's a time and a place, and I feel like the internet just jumps to the conclusions way too quickly.
Yeah, definitely it does. And I mean, it brings in another conversation too about like how much privacy do we owe celebrities, you know, because people deserve to live their lives, whether they're famous or not, and come to terms with their sexuality on their own timeline, make their own mistakes. And you know, it's just really fucked up that these people have to have, you know, all of this personal stuff just projected to the world just because of the profession that they're in,
which is directly in opposition to what you said last week about wanting a stalker to have an Instagram account dedicated
to
you.
Oh no, I do want to be I want to be a celebrity, and I want everybody to know me and love me. And that, yes, people can do whatever they want with that. But I feel bad for the other celebrities. That would be insinuating that I already am a celebrity.
Well, folks, thanks for our deep dive into this week's Slippery Slopes episode, I guess we could call it. Just all kinds of slipping and sliding around hot button issues. You know what we didn't talk about?
My puppies?
Kanye West. Anyway, it's been a great show. Thank you so much for listening. And Lindsay, do you have anything to plug before we head out?
No, just my puppies are going fast. So if you want a puppy, let me know, please.
And if you want to check out something else that I've been working on, I am a voice actor for the Scarab Archives, which is a horror podcast that just released a Halloween special that was part of the voiceover that I did for one of their haunted houses at Lazarus Creative Co. So if you want to hear me read a spooky bedtime story in a very spooky bedtime story voice, that's up. Just Google the Scarab Archives. You can find it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever. Just like you can find us wherever you find podcasts. Thank you so much for listening to Radio SGN, and we'll see you in the funny pages.
Radio SGN is hosted by A.V. Eichenbaum and Lindsay Anderson, and produced by A.V. Eichenbaum. Music for this show was provided by T.R.G. Banks and Jesse Spillane, or was provided for free by Anchor. Thank you so much for listening. Check us out on SGN.org or wherever you find podcasts.